The other day, somebody was telling me all about this great plugin for one of these video editing applications, I think it was After Effects or one of those, which allows you instamatically, at the push of a button, to add a Ken Burns effect to your video, which I suppose essentially lays down a ragtime soundtrack behind it and maybe pans very slowly across whatever still image you've got on your video, which I'm sure is quite useful for some purposes, although I try not to think too much about it. In any event, I only mention it because on a rainy day like today, in a rainy day podcast like today's rainy day podcast, it would be awfully nice to, at the push of a button, add some sort of old-time radio showdown effects to this podcast. So, developers, take note. That would be a nice thing to have. For the rest of you, good evening. It's Tuesday, a very rainy 29th of August 2006, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. Fard by Aldous Huxley. They had been quarrelling now for nearly three quarters of an hour. Muted and inarticulate, the voices floated down the corridor from the other end of the flat. Stooping over her sewing, Sophie wondered, without much curiosity, what it was all about this time. It was Madame's voice that she heard most often. Shrill with anger and indignant with tears, it burst out in gusts, in gushes. Monsieur was more self-controlled, and his deeper voice was too softly pitched to penetrate easily the closed doors and to carry along the passage. To Sophie, in her cold little room, the quarrel sounded, most of the time, like a series of monologues by Madame, interrupted by strange and ominous silences. But every now and then Monsieur seemed to lose his temper outright, and then there was no silence between the gusts, but a harsh, deep, angry shout. Madame kept up her loud shrillness continuously and without flagging, her voice hard, even in anger, a curious, level monotony. But Monsieur spoke now loudly, now softly, with emphases and modulations and sudden outbursts, so that his contributions to the scoreboard, when they were audible, sounded like a series of separate explosions. Bow, wow! Wow, wow, wow! Wow! A dog barking rather slowly. After a time, Sophie paid no more heed to the noise of quarrelling. She was mending one of Madame's camisoles, and the work required all her attention. She felt very tired. Her body ached all over. It had been a hard day. So had yesterday, so had the day before. Every day was a hard day, and she wasn't so young as she had been. 2 years more, and she'd be 50. Every day had been a hard day since she could remember. She thought of the sacks of potatoes she used to carry when she was a little girl in the country. Slowly, slowly she was walking along the dusty road with the sack over her shoulder. 10 steps more. She could manage that. Only it never was the end. One always had to begin again. She looked up from her sewing, moved her head from side to side, blinked. She had begun to see lights and spots of colour dancing before her eyes. It often happened to her now. A sort of yellowish, bright worm was wriggling up towards the right-hand corner of her field of vision, and though it was always moving upwards, upwards, it was always there in the same place. And there were stars of red and green that snapped and brightened and faded all round the worm. They moved between her and her sewing. They were there when she shut her eyes. After a moment, she went on with her work. Madame wanted her camisole most particularly tomorrow morning. But it was difficult to see round the worm. There was suddenly a great increase of noise from the other end of the corridor. A door had opened. Words articulated themselves. Bientôt, mon ami, si tu crois que je suis ton esclave, je ferai ce que je voudrais.
Moi aussi, monsieur uttered a harsh, dangerous laugh.
There was the sound of heavy footsteps in the passage, a rattling in the umbrella stand. Then the front door banged. Sophie looked down again at her work. Oh, the worm, the coloured stars, the aching fatigue in all her limbs. If one could only spend a whole day in bed, in a huge bed, feathery, warm and soft, all the day long. The ringing of the bell startled her. It always made her jump, that furious, wasp-like buzzer. She got up, put her work down on the table, smoothed her apron, set straight her cap, and stepped out into the corridor. Once more the bell buzzed furiously. Madame was impatient.
"At last, Sophie! I thought you were never coming!"
Sophie said nothing. There was nothing to say. Madame was standing in front of the open wardrobe. A bunch of dresses hung over her arm, and there were more of them lying in a heap on the bed. Une beauté à la Rubens, her husband used to call her when he was in an amorous mood. He liked these massive, splendid, great women. None of your flexible drain-pipes for him. Hélène Fumon was his pet name for her. Some day, Madame used to tell her friends, some day I really must go to the Louvre and see my portrait. By Rubens, you know. It's extraordinary that one should have lived all one's life in Paris and never have seen the Louvre. Don't you think so? She was superb tonight. Her cheeks were flushed. Her blue eyes shone with an unusual brilliance between their long lashes. Her short, red-brown hair had broken wildly loose.
"Tomorrow, Sophie," she said dramatically, "we start for Rome. Tomorrow morning."
She unhooked another dress from the wardrobe as she spoke, and threw it onto the bed. With the movement, her dressing gown flew open, and there was a vision of ornate underclothing and white, exuberant flesh.
"We must pack at once."
"For how long, madame?"
"A fortnight, 3 months, how should I know?"
"It makes a difference, madame."
"The important thing is to get away. I shall not return to this house, after what has been said to me tonight, till I am humbly asked to."
"We had better take the large trunk, then, madame. I will go and fetch it." The air in the box room was sickly with the smell of dust and leather. The box trunk was jammed in a far corner. She had to bend and strain at it in order to pull it out. The worm and the coloured stars flickered before her eyes. She felt dizzy when she straightened herself.
"I'll help you to pack, Sophie," said Madame when the servant returned.
dragging the heavy trunk after her. What a death's head to the old woman looked nowadays. She hated having old ugly people near her. But Sophie was so efficient, it would be madness to get rid of her. Madame need not trouble. There would be no end to it, Sophie knew, if Madame started opening drawers and throwing things about. Madame had much better go to bed. It is late. No, no, she wouldn't be able to sleep. She was to such a degree enervated. These men, what an embeastment! One was not their slave. One would not be treated in this way. Sophie was packing, a whole day in bed, in a huge soft bed like Madame's. One would doze, one would wake up for a moment, one would doze again. His latest game, Madame was saying indignantly, is to tell me he hasn't got any money. I'm not to buy any clothes, he says. Too grotesque. I can't go about naked, can I? She threw out her hands. And as for saying he can't afford it, that's simply nonsense. He can perfectly well, only he's mean, mean, horribly mean, and if he'd only do a little honest work for a change instead of writing silly verses and publishing them at his own expense, he'd have plenty, and to spare. She walked up and down the room. Besides, she went on, there's his old father. What's he for, I should like to know?
"You must be proud of having a poet for a husband," he says.
Pff, she made her voice quaver like an old man's. "It's all I can do not to laugh in his face."
"And what beautiful verses Hegesippe writes about you! What passion! What fire!"
Thinking of the old man, she grimaced, wobbled her head, shook her finger, dudded on her legs.
"And when one reflects that poor Hegesippe is bald and dyes the few hairs he has left," she laughed.
"As for the pattern he talks so much about in his beastly verses," she laughed, "that's all pure invention. But, my good Sophie, what are you thinking of? Why are you packing that hideous old green dress?" Sophie pulled out the dress without saying anything. Why did the woman choose this night to look so terribly ill? She had a yellow face and blue teeth. Madame shuddered. It was too horrible. She ought to send her to bed. But after all the work had to be done, what could one do about it? She felt, more than ever, aggrieved. "Life is terrible." Sighing, she sat down heavily on the edge of the bed. The buoyant springs rocked her gently once or twice before they settled to rest. "To be married to a man like this! I shall soon be getting old and fat, and never once unfaithful. But look how he treats me!" She got up again and began to wander aimlessly about the room. "I won't stand it, though," she burst out. She had halted in front of the long mirror, and was admiring her own splendid, tragic figure. No one would believe, to look at her, that she was over 30. Behind the beautiful tragedian, she could see in the glass a thin, miserable, old creature, with a yellow face and blue teeth, crouching over the trunk. Really, it was too disagreeable. Sophie looked like one of those beggar women one sees on a cold morning, standing in the gutter. Does one hurry past, trying not to look at them. Or does one stop, open one's purse, and give them one's copper and nickel, even as much as a 2-franc note, if one has no change? But whatever one did, one always felt uncomfortable, one always felt apologetic for one's furs. That was what came of walking. If one had a car, but that was another of Hedesby's meannesses, one wouldn't, rolling along behind closed windows, have to be conscious of them at all. She turned away from the glass. "I won't stand it," she said, trying not to think of the beggar woman of blue teeth in a yellow face. "I won't stand it." She dropped into a chair. But think of a lover with a yellow face and blue uneven teeth. She closed her eyes, shuddered at the thought. It would be enough to make one look sick. She felt impelled to take another look. Sophie's eyes were the colour of greenish lead, quite without life. What was one to do about it? The woman's face was a reproach, an accusation. And besides, the sight of it was making her feel positively ill. She had never been so profoundly enervated. Sophie rose, slowly and with difficulty, from her knees. An expression of pain crossed her face. Slowly she walked to the chest of drawers, slowly counted out 6 pairs of silk stockings. She turned back towards the trunk. The woman was a walking corpse. "Life is terrible," Madame repeated with conviction. "Terrible, terrible, terrible." She ought to send the woman to bed. But she would never be able to get her packing done by herself, and it was so important to get off tomorrow morning. She had told Giuseppe she would go, and he had simply laughed. He hadn't believed it. She must give him a lesson this time. In Rome she would see Luigi, you know. Such a charming boy, and a marquis too. Perhaps. But she could think of nothing but Sophie's face, her leaden eyes, the bluish teeth, the yellow wrinkled skin. "Sophie," she said suddenly. It was with difficulty that she could prevent herself screaming. "Look on my dressing table. You'll see a box of rouge, the Dorin number 24. Put a little on your cheeks. And there's a stick of lip salve in the right-hand drawer." She kept her eyes resolutely shut while Sophie got up, with what a horrible creaking of the joints, walked over to the dressing table, and stood there, rustling faintly through what seemed an eternity. What a life, my God, what a life! Slow footsteps trailed back again. She opened her eyes. Oh, that was far better, far better. "Thank you, Sophie. You look much less tired now." She got up briskly. "And now we must hurry." Full of energy, she ran to the wardrobe. "Goodness me," she exclaimed, throwing up her hands. "You've forgotten to put in my blue evening dress. How could you be so stupid, Sophie?"